Okay, so picture this. You're Steiny Richards. It's 3:40 in the morning. You're in your hotel room and you hear a knock at the door.
Oh boy.
Right. So you open it up and there's a guy standing there. Looks like he's wearing a maintenance uniform, but then you realize there's a police officer standing right behind him.
Oh wow.
Yeah, before you can even figure out what's going on, you slam the door shut.
Makes sense.
So this is the scenario that kicks off Richards v. Wisconsin, a Supreme Court case that really digs into the Fourth Amendment and those kind of tricky situations where police might be able to bypass the whole knock and announce rule.
Yeah, it's a really interesting case, and you set it up perfectly. That split-second decision to slam the door that Richards made, it had these huge consequences.
Right.
It set off a chain of events that went all the way to the Supreme Court and ended up changing how we think about these police entries.
So in this case, the police, they suspected Richards was involved with drugs and they got a warrant to search his hotel room.
Right.
But get this, the warrant specifically said no to a no-knock entry, but the officers decided to go in anyway.
That's
So
exactly.
why did they do that?
Well, they claimed that Richard slamming the door gave them what they called reasonable suspicion to think that he might destroy evidence.
Oh, I see.
I mean, think about it, drugs, especially something like cocaine, it can be flushed down the toilet, tossed out a window, hidden in seconds.
Yeah, that's true.
So the officers, they're in a tough spot. They have this warrant, but it restricts what they can do, and then the situation seems to change right in front of them.
So did the Supreme Court side with the police on that? I mean, it seems like kind of a slippery slope. Couldn't officers pretty much always find some excuse to do a no-knock entry?
Well, that's exactly the type of question that the courts have to wrestle with. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court, actually, they upheld this like blanket exception to the knock and announce rule for any felony drug case.
Really?
Yeah, their reasoning was that in those cases, you often need to act quickly to prevent evidence from being destroyed.
Interesting. So they basically said if it's a drug case, you don't have to knock. But the U.S. Supreme Court, I'm guessing they weren't so on board with that.
No, they weren't. They overturned that blanket exception. They basically said, hold on, we can't just throw out the knock and announce rule every single time drugs are involved. The Fourth Amendment requires a more careful approach, a case-by-case assessment.
Okay, so no
Yeah.
more automatic pass for drug cases. Got it. But what was the Supreme Court's reasoning? How did they balance the need for law enforcement to do their job effectively with protecting everyone's individual rights?
So they said that to justify a no-knock entry, officers need what's called reasonable suspicion, which is a little different from probable cause, which is what they needed for the search warrant in the first place.
Okay, now I'm going to need you to break that down for me. What's the difference there?
Okay, so think of it this way. Probable cause is like having a strong belief backed up by evidence that a crime has happened.
Okay.
Reasonable suspicion is a step below that. It means the officers, they have specific articulable facts that make them think that knocking and announcing would either put them in danger or be pointless because no one would open up, or that it would give the suspect time to destroy evidence.
So in this specific case with Richards, did the Supreme Court think that him slamming the door was enough to meet that reasonable suspicion standard? Seems a little weak to me, but hey, I'm not Supreme Court
Well,
justice.
the court found that Richard's actions, plus the fact that cocaine is so easily disposed of, did actually give the officers a valid reason to believe that announcing themselves would have resulted in the evidence being lost.
So they were in the clear, legally speaking?
In this particular instance, yes. The
Yeah.
Supreme Court ultimately said the no-knock entry was justified, and so the drugs and cash they found were admissible in court.
Okay.
But, and this is super important, they did not make a blanket rule that applies to all drug cases. They really emphasized that every situation needs to be judged on its own based on the unique circumstances.
So it sounds like Richards v. Wisconsin set a pretty important precedent. It really affects how police approach these situations and how courts review their actions afterward.
Absolutely. It really solidified this idea that no-knock entries aren't automatically unconstitutional, but they're not a free pass either. There needs to be more than just a gut feeling. Officers have to be able to articulate very clearly why they thought knocking and announcing their presence would be dangerous or pointless.
And that's where things get really interesting because this isn't just some abstract legal debate. It has real-world consequences for how law enforcement operates, especially when it comes to drug investigations.
You're exactly right. And it's a case that continues to be debated and analyzed, especially as we have these ongoing discussions about the use of no-knock warrants in high-risk situations.
And that's what we're going to get into next,
Yeah.
right? How Richards v. Wisconsin has been applied in the years since it was decided, and the arguments for and against using no-knock warrants.
Right.
This is fascinating stuff. So Richards v. Wisconsin, it didn't create some strict rule about no-knock entries. It's more like they gave the court some guidelines to use when they're figuring out if a no-knock entry was justified.
Exactly. The case really provides a framework more than a definite answer that fits every situation.
Right.
It emphasizes that courts need to look at each case individually, weighing the need for effective law enforcement against protecting individual rights.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But how do courts actually apply that reasonable suspicion standard? What are they looking for when they have to decide if a no-knock entry was the right call?
Well, the Richards decision, it highlighted a few important things to think about. First, you have the nature of the evidence itself. We've already talked about how easy it is to destroy drugs. But you can imagine other types of evidence that might be relevant too, like digital files or sensitive documents, or maybe even weapons, things that could be hidden quickly or getting rid of.
So if the police think that the evidence is something that could disappear in a few seconds, that makes a no-knock entry more likely to be seen as reasonable.
Exactly. And then there's the behavior of the suspect. Remember Richards slamming the door? That was a major factor in the Supreme Court's decision.
Yeah.
But there are other actions that could raise red flags, too, like if a suspect is making furtive movements or reaching for something the officers can't see, or if they try to run away when the police first show up.
So it's about whether the suspect's actions kind of suggest that they know the police are there and they might be trying to get rid of evidence or make a run for it. It's like that classic scene in a movie where the criminal hears a noise and suddenly starts shredding documents or smashing their hard drive.
That's a perfect analogy. The courts are looking for those kinds of behaviors, the ones that suggest a person knows the police are there and they're trying to hide something. Another thing they consider is the environment where the search is happening.
Okay.
Is it a high crime area? Has there been a history of violence associated with the suspect or the location? Are there other people there who might be put in danger if the police announce themselves?
So it sounds like a lot depends on the context. It's not just about the crime itself. It's about the bigger picture, the potential dangers, and trying to balance effective law enforcement with respecting everyone's rights.
It's complicated.
You got it. It is complicated, and that's why the Supreme Court keeps stressing that the Fourth Amendment requires a nuanced approach, not some rigid one-size-fits-all rule. Each case needs to be looked at individually.
But I feel like there have been some pretty serious concerns raised about no-knock warrants, especially recently. I mean, haven't we seen a lot of news reports about these types of raids going really wrong sometimes, even with tragic consequences? You're absolutely right. There's been a growing debate about the use of no-knock warrants, especially when it comes to drug cases. Critics argue that they can be very dangerous, that they escalate situations unnecessarily, and that they disproportionately impact communities of color.
And what about the argument that even if a no-knock entry is technically legal, it can still be incredibly traumatic for the people involved? I mean, imagine you're sleeping in your home and all of a sudden armed officers are bursting through your door in the middle of the night. It's got to be terrifying, even if you haven't done anything wrong.
You're bringing up a really important point. That potential for psychological trauma, for people to feel lasting fear and anxiety, that's a serious concern. And courts are starting to give it more weight when making decisions. It's not just about whether the police had a reasonable suspicion on paper. It's about the human cost of these tactics and whether they're really necessary in every case.
So it's a really complex issue with no easy answers. We're trying to protect people's safety, but also respect their rights.
Yeah.
And sometimes those two goals seem to clash.
Exactly. And that leads to another really important question. Are there alternatives? Are there other ways to conduct these investigations that might be less intrusive, less likely to result in violence or trauma? Could we improve training and oversight for police to try to minimize the risks that come with no-knock warrants?
Those are really tough questions, and it doesn't seem like there's one solution that fixes everything.
You're right. There's no magic bullet.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're even having this conversation, that courts and lawmakers are grappling with these issues, that's a good sign. It means we're recognizing how complex it is, that we have to carefully weigh different interests, and that it's crucial to find ways to protect both individual rights and public safety.
Okay, so we've talked about the legal side of Richards v. Wisconsin, that reasonable suspicion standard and all the things courts have to consider. But how does all of this actually affect people like you and me, like the average person? How does this case play out in our everyday lives?
Well, that's where things get real. This isn't just some abstract legal concept. It directly impacts how law enforcement interacts with people out in the world.
Right. Because if the police show up at your door with a warrant, it's really important to know what your rights are and how these rules work.
Absolutely. And the first thing to remember is if the police knock on your door, you have the right to remain silent. You don't have to answer any questions or let them search your place without a warrant.
And even if they do have a warrant, that doesn't automatically mean they can barge in, right?
Exactly. The knock and announce rule still applies unless they have a no-knock warrant or there's some kind of emergency that requires them to go in immediately.
So say the police are at your door and you're not really sure what to do or what your rights are. What's the best way to handle that?
The most important thing is to stay calm and don't make any sudden movements.
Okay.
Ask to see the warrant and make sure it's valid and that it's for your address.
Makes sense. And what if they try to come in without knocking, or if you feel like your rights are being violated, what can you do then?
You can definitely object verbally and tell them that you think they're entering unlawfully. But it's super important to avoid getting into any kind of physical altercation that could escalate things and put you in danger.
Right. So basically, stand up for your rights, but do it peacefully and respectfully.
Exactly. And if you believe that your rights were violated, you should contact a lawyer as soon as possible.
Got it.
They can help you figure out if you have a case to challenge the search or try to get any evidence that was gathered illegally thrown out.
It seems like Richards v. Wisconsin, as complicated as it is, has some pretty clear implications for everyone. It's a reminder that we do have rights when it comes to police searches, and those rights are important.
For sure. It highlights that constant tension between giving law enforcement the power to do their job and making sure that individual liberties are protected. It's a delicate balance, and we as a society need to keep talking about it and figuring out how to make it work.
So Richards v. Wisconsin gives us a lot to think about, both in terms of our own legal rights and the bigger picture of how things work in our communities. It's a case that's still relevant today. It shapes how we view police powers, individual freedoms, and the pursuit of justice.
Yeah, and it leaves us with some really important questions to consider.
Right.
What should the standard for reasonable suspicion be? How can we make sure that no-knock warrants are only used when they're absolutely necessary and not just as a routine thing? How do we create a system that protects individual rights and keeps our communities safe?
Those are some tough questions, and it doesn't seem like there's any easy answers.
No easy answers, but they're the right questions to be asking. And the fact that we are asking them, that courts and lawmakers are wrestling with these issues, that's a positive sign.
I agree.
It means we're recognizing the complexity of the situation, the need to carefully consider everyone's interests, and the importance of finding ways to uphold both individual rights and public safety.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. It's clear that Richards v. Wisconsin continues to have a major impact on law enforcement and the way we think about the Fourth Amendment. Thanks for breaking it all down for us.
You gotta always happy to dive into these important cases.
And for all of you listening out there, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Richards v. Wisconsin. We'll be back next week with another thought-provoking case that's shaped the legal landscape. Until then, stay curious and keep those legal minds engaged.